Like the Klan's gathering for the St. Patrick's Day parade, the houses came together in New York in mid-March for the annual meeting of the Association of American Publishers. The audience at the McGraw-Hill Auditorium on 6th Avenue heard the book business's near-term future likened to the music industry's recent past. And they were told that democracy, the economy, and intellectual progress are unsustainable without the publishing industry. Hello and welcome to Beyond the Book, Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series covering the media industry. My name is Christopher Keneally, and joining me from Manhattan is Jeremy Greenfield, Editorial Director for F&W Media's DigitalBookWorld.com. Jeremy, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Thanks, Chris. Great to be here.
Well, we are happy to have you join us again and give us some really very breaking news from the AAP meeting. First of all, the U.S. Register of Copyright, Maria Palanti, was there to buck up the room, I suppose we could put it, and tell them how important copyright was.
Absolutely. She delivered a roughly half an hour, 40-minute speech on the importance of copyright and how the Copyright Office understood a publisher's special place in the American business world and understood that copyrights were necessary for publishers to take the risks that they need to take to publish books and to build a business. At the same time, she said, lawyers in D.C. know the difference between copyright owners who lose money because of piracy and publishers who lose money because of risk. So her speech was a very general overview of the Copyright Office's position vis-a-vis publishers, and I don't think that's really changed at all recently, which is that we're here to protect your copyrights. We're not here to give you a monopoly over all information in the country, and I think publishers understand that. It was a timely message, though, because right now one of the issues facing publishers is that of piracy, and as more books go digital and digital reading platforms proliferate, something publishers are going to be worrying about more and more is piracy and how to combat it.
Right. And so Carrie Sherman, who's the chairman and CEO of the Recording Industry Association of America, a group that knows just a little bit about piracy, also spoke to the group. And how did he connect the two industries, the recording industry and the book publishing industry?
You know, he didn't specifically say, here's why the recording industry is a good indicator of what might happen in the book publishing industry, but he did paint a very grim picture of what could happen if things go terribly wrong. By his account, in the late 90s, the recording industry was about $15 billion concern, and today it's about a $7 billion concern, employing roughly half or a little bit less than half of the people that it used to employ. And he even said, you know, you could call the music industry a canary in a coal mine for ebooks. He didn't quite elaborate on exactly why it was the same. But clearly there are some similarities. When the recording industry started to deal with issues of piracy and being undercut by new digital businesses and by pirating of copyrighted material was when the iPod started becoming really popular and music sharing sites started becoming really popular. And you know, that happened in the early 2000s. Books have been electronic since the mid-90s or even earlier, depending on how you count. But e-readers have only recently become very popular. And so, you know, maybe there's a connection there. But I happen to think that books and music are a fundamentally different kind of content. Books are an experience that can last many, many hours, depending on how fast of a reader you are. For me, you know, 10, 20, 30 hours, depending on the length of the book. Whereas a song is a very small, discrete bit of information that really only lasts 3 minutes. For better or for worse, books don't really hold the same place in popular culture that music does. Music is on the radio. It's all over television. It's part of our commercials. It's part of our other media. The kids love it. Whereas, you know, e-books are, you know, they have a very important place in culture, but they don't have the same ubiquity and demand that music does. So I'm not sure that the music industry is a great example for the books industry, but I do think that the publishers and the audience, are looking at the position of the large record labels and recording companies and seeing how their business was really undercut, partially by piracy, and want to take the appropriate measures to make sure the same thing doesn't happen to them.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, publishers would certainly be wise to look at the music industry's if not quite demise, certainly their the malady they've suffered for the last 10 years as an abject lesson. Did you get a feeling in the room that people were ready to take on those lessons, or is there still a sense of denial that things are going to be different for the book business?
You know, I didn't speak specifically to anyone in the leadership function at a publishing company about that particular point. But I can tell you that they're speaking with their wallets and they're speaking with their actions. The AAP participated in a very informal study with the Commerce Department last year about piracy and ebooks, and they basically queried some of the very largest publishers about what they've done over the past several years regarding piracy and ebooks. And they really haven't done much, and I think it's because the threat, you know, isn't really cutting into their bottom lines that much. From 2008 to 2010, 8 of the 10 largest U.S. publishers spent a combined $800,000 combating piracy. I mean, $800,000 might sound like a lot of money, but when you're talking about companies that generate collectively billions of dollars in revenue annually, that's really not very much at all. It's sort of a drop in the bucket. A handful of those companies said they employed one or more than one people to combat piracy. So I think that regardless of how publishers feel about piracy, regardless of the threat that they perceive, you can tell a lot about how it's really affecting the business by what kind of money publishers are spending to combat it. And right now, it's just not very much.
Well, it's a terrific point, Jeremy Greenfield, editorial director at digitalbookworld.com, who is telling us about the most recent annual meeting of the Association of American Publishers. And I guess we talk about publishers as if they were this monolithic block. And of course, there are, it covers a multitude of businesses, and all of them have very different approaches to what they do themselves and to how they think the whole industry should tackle some of these issues. And you mentioned in your reporting, of course, when it comes to things like digital rights management, there's no consensus there either. O'Reilly, for example, is the standout who in their rejection of DRM.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you make a really great point there. In my years of business journalism, I've never covered an industry that was so fractured in terms of the different kinds of companies doing different kinds of things. It's an industry that is not monolithic at all. It's full of niches and verticals and little pockets of activity, and it's very complex the way all of the different players interact with each other. But yeah, the issue of digital rights management is a complicated one because it goes beyond publishers wanting to protect their copyright. I mean, clearly, if you or I created a piece of information and we thought that piece of information was valuable and we wanted to sell it and we were successful at selling it, but somebody on the street or outside of our organization was, you know, profiting it off of it themselves or giving it away for free, you know, I don't think that's fair. I think a lot of people would agree that that's not fair and nobody wants it. So that's one part of DRM, is to try to prevent that unfairness, try to prevent that undercutting of business. But another part of the DRM issue is that there are some people in the publishing industry who believe that making digital rights management software a standard part of ebooks hurts the industry in a variety of ways. You know, in a very simple explanation, there's a group of customers who want to have ebooks on whatever device they want to have them and whatever reading platform they want to have them whenever they want to have them, and they're happy to pay for that. Digital rights management software often prevents those things. And secondarily, and more directly, the CEO of Anobi, which is a fairly large online bookseller in Europe, has suggested that digital rights management software actually helps certain industry players grow and maintain a dominance over the ebook market. And I think, you know, it's pretty obvious that he was talking about Amazon. Amazon currently holds roughly 2/3 of the ebook market, and what he argued was is that Amazon uses digital rights management software as a way to keep customers from going elsewhere. And, you know, we wrote a fairly long and complicated article about it, and you can go to digitalbookworld.com and read it. But I think when he delivered that message to the audience of publishers at Digital Book World in January, it was one that was pretty well received. A lot of publishers like to hear saber rattling against Amazon. And I think, you know, many of them did buy the argument that digital rights management may be helping a company that they perceive as harmful to their own businesses. So we may see some movement on this issue in the coming year.
Well, Jeremy, you mentioned Digital Book World, the conference back in January. Also at that conference, Jim Hilt, who is the vice president for ebooks at Barnes & Noble, made some statements that must have also fallen well in the ears of people there, because in contrast with what Amazon does for the business, they were talking about giving publishers a greater insight into how the ebook marketplace really works. What do you know about that right now?
Well, that was a really interesting talk. He said, I think three times over a 20-minute speech, that Barnes & Noble was committed to giving more information about reader habits and their consumers' habits to publishers. And this was our headline story of that day at the conference, because ever since there have been e-readers and e-books, publishers have been clamoring for more information about consumers. They want to know, do consumers actually read the books that we sell them? How far do they read? When do they stop? When do they start? How do they move from one book to another? And this is information that publishers, I think, believe is very valuable to them. Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Apple and others have not been forthcoming on sharing that information. That's also very valuable consumer information for them. And so there's been somewhat of a standoff between the publishers and the booksellers on this issue. So when, you know, the representative of a major bookseller goes on stage at a major publishing event and says, we will be sharing more information with you, obviously ears perk up. So we asked Barnes & Noble then whether there were formal plans to do that. Were they going to create a publisher dashboard? What kind of information will they give to publishers? When will they give it to them? Who will they give it to specifically? And Barnes & Noble did not respond to our request for comment on that. Last night, I was lucky enough to attend a panel discussion sponsored by the Columbia Business School about ebooks, and it was a very intimate setting, and Jim Hilt from Barnes & Noble was on the panel, and I asked him about some details of this, and he told me that they have informal conversations with publishers all the time where they share information about readers with them, that those conversations were no different than conversations they were having before Digital Book World, and that they had no formal plans to share more information with publishers. So I think it might be disappointing for publishers to find out that there isn't going to be movement from Barnes & Noble on this issue in the immediate future.
Well, certainly something we'll watch, and we'll watch on digitalbookworld.com for future reporting from you. Indeed, there have been some changes there on the website that I know you want to tell us about.
Yeah, digitalbookworld.com has gone through quite an evolution over the past 5 months, and the market has really responded to us. Our traffic has just increased greatly. We've picked up thousands and thousands more Twitter followers and newsletter subscribers. The growth has just been incredible, and I think everyone here has just been flattered by the outpouring of, you know, support for digitalbookworld.com. And in the past 2 weeks, we launched two new features that we believe will give our readers a leg up in the marketplace when they are thinking about how they're going to strategize their ebook business and when they're thinking about their own careers. The first feature is something we call Digital Bookwire. And Digital Bookwire is essentially all the news you need to know about what's going on in digital books exactly when you need to know it. We are publishing 5 to 10 or even more items every single day about everything going on in the digital book space. Everything from a very large announcement today that Hachette, a major book publisher, is joining an open source project to make an EPUB 3 reader, which is, it's a very important project from the IDPF to create a new reader that can support EPUB 3, which is the new ebook language that will offer consumers richer ebook experiences. All the way down to less important announcements, that a new Atlas application has come out that takes advantage of the new iPad's Retina display. And all of these pieces of information are relevant to people in the digital book world as they navigate their careers and as they navigate this new industry that we're in. And the second thing that we've launched, we're calling our Digital Book World Expert Publishing Blog. basically, we've gathered expert voices from all around the industry, people who are working in publishing companies, people who are self-published authors, publicists, marketers, people at libraries, who are all experts in the digital book space. And we've basically given them the keys to the car. They have logins to the digitalbookworld.com content management system, and with a little bit of guiding and a little bit of help, they are able to, you know, publish their thoughts of what's going on in digital books. And we've had some incredible things published. We had an exclusive interview with marketing guru Seth Godin that has done very, very well. We've had advice on how to sell more books using the Kindle Online Lending Library. We had an article yesterday that's created quite a stir, actually, that I'd love to share with your audience. Written by Bob Mayer, who is the CEO of Who Dares Wins Publishing, which is a digital publishing startup. And the headline of the article, I think, says it all. Was March 2012 the month traditional publishing died? And I think that there are a lot of publishers that would read that and would think, well, we're still here. I don't think that we're dead. And I think I'm going to write a blog response to that based on my attendance of the AAP meeting, that the reports of publishers' deaths are greatly exaggerated, cribbing a little bit from Mark Twain, who famously said that the reports of his death were greatly exaggerated. Because I think they are. It's a vibrant industry. If you look at some of the largest publishers last year, they had fantastic earnings, and ebooks really drove a lot of the earnings growth. So we at Digital Book World are excited to be covering it in a more substantive way than ever before, and we believe that these two new features will really help our readers stay ahead of the game.
Well, Chairman Greenfield, finally, I mean, the point you're making there is perhaps on the traditional industry. I mean, the book industry is no longer traditional. You run a site called Digital Book World. That's not an oxymoron now. That's very much an important part of the marketplace. And you have an interview just recently with someone who's really kind of leading the charge in all of that. I want to ask you what it was like to talk to Nicholas Calloway. He's the founder and chief content officer of Calloway Digital Arts, and someone who's been from the very beginning, from like the very first iPad, a real evangelist for ebooks and for apps themselves. What was it like chatting with him, and give us a takeaway or two on what he told you?
Calloway is a very interesting guy. He's been in the publishing business for over 30 years now, and in the last two, he has been at the forefront, as you said, with his company, Calloway Digital Arts, which basically is an app company. They produce, publish apps, both based on intellectual property that they don't own, for instance, in the company's partnership with Sesame Street, and with intellectual property that they develop themselves. So they have an app series called Miss Spider that is a best-selling app series. And these are largely children's books for the most part. Calloway, I think there are two things that really stuck out for me with my conversation with him. First of all, he looks at all of the other publishing entities around him, and he thinks that to be successful in the new digital publishing landscape, they need to all start over. And that's what he's done with Calloway Digital Arts. He's building a company that's half content company, half technology company. And he's not saddled with any sort of legacy publishing operations that may or may not need attending to. Now, on the one hand, that means his revenues are a lot smaller. Publishers like Hachette that I mentioned earlier make a tremendous amount of money on print publishing, and it's a much larger part of the business still than ebooks. But on the other hand, it means that he can concentrate on what he believes to be the future, which is digital publishing. So I thought that was an interesting insight. And then the second thing is, how do you build that company? How do you go from, how do you build a company that doesn't exist yet? And what he does, he focuses on hiring. When he wakes up in the morning, the first thing he does isn't check his email. It's think about his recruiting. To build a technology company, you have to recruit very high level, very expensive, very hard to get talent. You know, believe it or not, the unemployment rate for technology talent is around 3%. And, you know, compare that with the 8% plus unemployment rate across the country, and you can see it's very, very hard to find really good new technology workers. And that's what his company is really focused on. I was talking to a VP of digital at a major publisher earlier this week, and they were telling me that technology hiring is very, very tough for them. Callaway Digital Arts can offer its technology hires equity in the company. It can offer them, you know, work on cutting-edge stuff. It can offer them all the accoutrement of technology companies that you would come to know, these great perks and benefits and quite frankly, very rich pay. The book publishing companies can't offer those things. They certainly can't offer equity. And book publishing is an industry that, in general, pays a little bit less than other industries. So it's not used to spending $150,000 or $300,000 on a programmer annually. But unfortunately for them, that's what it takes right now. So Callaway is a little bit ahead of the game in terms of building what he considers the technology company of the future.
Well, it seems a really thoughtful approach. And as he told you in his interview, to fight for those kind of high-end people, he's got to get to somebody who's willing to turn down Facebook and Google.
Absolutely, and that's the competition we're talking about. And Facebook and Google aren't actually even the toughest part of the competition. The toughest part of the competition is other small startups, or even worse, when the technology talent wants to start their own startup. A very typical conversation happening in Silicon Valley right now is, you know, a young technology pro has a great startup idea and is trying to build a core team around him, meeting another young technology pro and saying, hey, we've got this great startup idea, why don't you join up? And the other technology pro says, you know, I had a great startup idea and I was hoping you would join me. So the recruiting right now for technology talent is incredibly difficult. It's cutthroat. Companies like Callaway are offering packages that are designed to keep engineers around for 6 months or 12 months in the hope that they can have them at least that long before they get lured away by another company. So it's very tough.
Right, indeed. Well, Jeremy Greenfield, thank you for all of those insights from the recent annual meeting of the Association of American Publishers, and otherwise your wanderings throughout Manhattan to get the latest news from the digital book world. Jeremy Greenfield is editorial director for F&W Media's digitalbookworld.com. Jeremy, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Chris, and I hope everyone will go check out the new digitalbookworld.com. This is just the beginning of our growth, and we're going to have a lot of more exciting, interesting things for readers later in the year.
And we look forward to having you back to tell us about them. So sit tight there, and we'll chat with you again very soon indeed. We should tell people that Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as now images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/beyondthebook. Our engineer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.